There's an echo. If you could help get rid of that, I'd be very grateful. Let's perhaps dive right in. The echo is still there. I would be very interested to know what the, in a sense, the narrative arc of your involvement in this project was. Hans, I know from our many conversations that as a maker of artworks in public spaces, you often find yourself in Strauchan's position, that artworks that you've made are subjected to shifting economic and ideological circumstances, and that they register these changes in ways that might affect their endurance. Bram and Jack, I'm also curious about the ways in which this research has mobilized, in a way, your involvement in the project, and whether your perception of the blue waves has changed in the process. Hans, perhaps you could go first.
Yeah, you can say I have some some experiences with politics and art, and especially relate to art in public space. Maybe that was not really the reason why I wanted to make this film, the real trigger to make this film was an initiative of art students to protest against the demolition of this artwork from Peter Struiken, and I was asked to speak during this demonstration, and this demonstration was prohibited by the board of the academy, which I thought was quite a strange situation, that a board of academy prohibits a protest to protect an artwork. So I thought something must be going on here. So, and I was asked previously by the academy to do a pilot project, which means you're a guest teacher for 3 months and you work, you do something. And I said this is a good moment to do a pilot project. So I had the idea to gather a group of students who were interested in doing research on what's going on here. That's basically how I started. But in general, yeah, of course, it has my interest, this kind of, you know, the way artists relate to politics is very interesting, and it's very complicated as well. So, yeah, this was a good opportunity to do research on this particular case.
There's a slight ambiguity there, because the film, I think the film is very skillful at presenting that that ambivalence, in a way, because it starts at research, but we're gradually emotionally, I think, reeled in and made to believe in the value of the blue waves. But if I understand correctly your answer, you started from, in a sense, from an activist position from the very beginning. Your goal was preservation, and your goal was to reestablish Strauchan's ownership of his artwork, in a sense, in spite of the shifting conditions around it.
Yeah.
You want to take a moment?
No, I didn't feel it as an act of activism, but I did know that work for a long time, and it is an iconic artwork from the Arnhem School. It is the Eiffel Tower of Arnhem, yeah. And I thought it was it was a flattened Eiffel Tower, and it was astonishing that this idea came up, and actually because it was not a good idea, you know, it just was just an idea of some idiot chairman that wanted to make a park and thought it was legit to demolish an artwork from this importance. So if you call that activism, it's maybe activism, but I just thought. Also from my own experience, all these processes, all the people who are involved in this politics, all the legal issues concerning these kind of decision made is so, it's fuzzy. You know, there's no strict regulation and no protocol on how to deal with this cultural heritage thing. So everybody is just doing something according to their own agendas. And I wanted to clarify that. And there's another reason, you know, when I did art school, to work in public space was a general practice. Artists did that. And since the no, I think since 20 years or something, this idea of working in public spaces is a sort of disappeared. So the idea that as an artist you can mean something in the development of a city slightly disappears. What you see on Art Academy is that a lot of art students, they believe in the art system and they believe in art institutions. You work for a gallery, or you know. But the idea that you have the ability to create culture within the context of the city is slightly disappearing. So I thought it would be very good to mobilize some young artists and discover this area. So it had a sort of a double interest.
Jack, what was your experience? What was the narrative arc of your involvement in this? We see you exasperated at one point on the phone, getting these contradictory answers from the same person, and being in the throes of a bureaucratic machine. But I wonder, on a deeper level, how you moved between perhaps this position of the researcher that sees his object in a way constantly crumble, and perhaps a different stance in relation to the blue waves.
For me, this project was very much, okay, I'm just going to be honest, I just wanted to be on TV. But apart from that detail, it's very...
only
get to tell one joke. Only, this is very much activist, but it's not a pro artwork activist film. It's more about almost trying to dismantle a system of indifference where you have this political thing going on, and everyone who's really involved in it and who has the power to vote, they don't really care. They just want to make their deals and use it as sort of political capital. And when we started asking questions, everyone suddenly had to stop for a moment and think, you know, oh, do we hate it or do we love it? And then whatever the answer isn't that important, but it's more about making sure that everyone has answered the question instead of just sort of bulldozering over the matter and not even thinking for a second what's going on. So that was, for me, the important bit.
That's very beautiful, because it positions our attention somewhere halfway between the blue waves and the kind of organized indifference, legislated indifference, and sometimes even idiocy of the people who should be the conservators, the caretakers of the artwork and of public space. Bram, same question.
So I think my interest in participating in this project, because I was also mobilized by Hans, not as a student, but as an alumni from this academy. My interest was mainly that I did a project in public space just a year before, and I wanted to do this way more often, but I had a bit the feeling that it's indeed a practice that I didn't learn in school, while the academy in Arnhem was renowned for the artists that work in public space that come from this academy. And that I also had this ambition, but it didn't really got the opportunities, or was not very, actually never accepted for, my proposals were never accepted, and they were always all the artists who were doing that, the people who were in the academy and graduated on this topic more. So I think I was very interested in participating in the project because it still was about art in public space, and also because I'm from this town, I'm from Arnhem, I was born, raised, studied, I live there, I will maybe be buried there as well, and it was also weird because I always took this artwork for granted as an object, as a thing, as a place, and I didn't even know when I realized it was an artwork, and I also think it. I didn't even care if it was an artwork or not. And for me, that was very symbolic, because therefore it means, in my opinion, that it's a good work, because it really dissolves into this space, dissolves into the everyday reality. of the people who are living there, and therefore its functions, so to say. And yeah, I couldn't imagine being something else there. So I started from a curiosity to the structure, to the political structures, and to the meaning of the artwork, and also to what would happen. What would happen when we were making this film? And this was something which I find very, very interesting, because it turned out that the research that we were doing actually was a creative force in itself. Yeah, but maybe a bit more on that later.
For me, one of the most striking elements in the film is this enormous gulf, gap, abyss perhaps, between a more conventional museological image of the artist, whose work is, in a way, there's a polyphony of gestures of conservation and care and maintenance, and of associated with what it means to be an artist, you know, within the art historical canon, and the far grittier, messier image of the artist working in public space, whose work is exposed to all these fluctuations, and who's not owed a debt of conservation in a way, whose work can always be sacrificed because of those changing conditions. And I wonder if this was in a way an element of your participation in the project, this sense of perhaps a notion of the artist as it is taught in the art academy being confronted with these very hands-on circumstances.
I had the feeling that also I was also interested in because this is, I think, the largest piece of Peter Struiken, and I had the impression already years before that in the Netherlands, at least, everything is sort of like cultural valid for 20 or maybe 30 years, and then it has to make place for something new. You see this with infrastructure, with stations, with all kinds of architecture, that as soon as the cultural approach changes, everything that used to be in a different approach has to make space for the new. And also with Peter Struiken, you saw very clearly that, at least I had the feeling, I found it quite sort of tragic that he came from this era in which he gathered fame, made this huge project, was renowned for that, but then suddenly, yeah, like the culture changed, and also the approach to art and appreciation for art in public space was also being demonized politically in 2009, 10, 11. And that he, so to speak, a bit on the end of his life, then saw everything that he had built up suddenly being appreciated less, being in decay, being removed. And I found the tragic in this character, which he doesn't show too much, but of which I think that it's behind there a bit as well. I find it very fascinating. And also, I think it's, as I said, it says a lot about the Dutch culture of like being hyped on things that are being modern, or on progress, and on forgetting what should be in the past, like Peter Struiken maybe.
Yeah. Hans, I wonder how you describe the impact of the project. What exactly was it? Yeah, what exactly was it that your perhaps activism disguised as research produced? My feeling, but perhaps correct me if that feeling is incorrect, was that you actually made visible this polyphony of voices around the project without truly intervening in the debate, just in a way functioning like a permanent obstacle, like a buffer, proposing that we take a moment to consider the thing and allowing those contrasting opinions to bounce, to collide with one another, and finally produce the positive, I would say, outcome in the end. Would you?
Yeah, we when we started, we agreed on the fact that we didn't want to take a stand too much. We said we were neutral. We weren't neutral, but at least that's how we presented ourselves as being neutral. It was also a good attitude to open doors. I think what this, and that was really how it was meant, we always look at documentaries about art in which the art is the center and it's discussed and its contact is a sort of providing the legitimacy of the artwork. And I thought it would be very interesting to turn that around. So basically all the context becomes the protagonist and the artwork itself is just the subject, you know? So all the people who are organized and who we choose for to protect our cultural heritage show their ability and their disability and their struggle, perhaps, or their limited reach they have. Maybe it's interesting to mention that this film also have a spin-off, which is, I think, very interesting because, as you've seen, the two organizations for cultural heritage in the Netherlands, that's the Rijksdienst for Cultural Heritage and the Rijksbouwmeester, it's a college of, let's say, state architecture. These are the people. These are the two organizations that has the that have the most power and basically are there to preserve cultural heritage. And you've seen them both in the film saying, "Yeah, we like to protect it, but we cannot. We don't have the tools to do so." And half a year ago, there was a conference organized by one of these organizations, and we showed the film and we had a debate with both of the organizations. And basically, what became clear is that these two organizations could not manage what a group of students could, you know. So the conclusion is, yeah, you having a lack of instruments. If you're not able to do what some innocent students, and they admit that. So what we do now, and it's a sort of an idea coming from Joanna Rakowska. She's a Polish artist, and she made a work. It's called Greetings from Jerusalem. It's a work in Warsaw. It's a palm tree, and that palm tree has Jewish connotations. As long as it exists, it's now for 20 years, or even more than 20 years. It is a controversial piece, always subject to all kinds of anger and all kinds of harassments and all kinds of things. And she managed just two years ago to make it possible to give this work citizenship. And this idea I introduced with these two big cultural heritage organizations in the Netherlands to figure out if we could install an instrument like that. And they are open to it. So we are now organizing in the Netherlands and a big conference, international conference, with people also from London and from Ljubljana to see if that's a way to go. You know, so just to, you see it a lot now in relation to nature. You know, rivers and areas are giving legal rights. And I like very much this term citizenship. Like we talked this morning about the term Lungbung, as it sounds good and it feels good. You know, I like very much this idea of citizenship for public artworks as a new means of determined value. That's basically where it's for.
But you need a legal framework for citizenship, which would be in a sense comparable to the art historical framework. That grants value or retracts value from an object, and you need somebody who decides on citizenship or on withdrawing citizenship from a problematic monument that should be toppled, perhaps, yeah, or covered in some sort of public shame.
Yeah, yeah. It's not without trouble. I expect a lot of trouble, but interesting trouble. What it offers is an opportunity to redefine the idea of value, and that is what culture needs. You know, if you see all these people in this film, or at least most of them, they have no clue how to connect culture and art to an idea of value. And if we provide an idea of value, and we make it even in a legal way workable, it is also for these organizations an instrument they can work with. So it's really not a theoretical exercise what we're aiming for, but we really aim for implanting it, installing it. Yeah. And I think there's good hopes. This institution already let us know that they are really, really into it.
There's, of course, something else that a citizenship doesn't necessarily provoke among other citizens. And I think that that's something that happened when we were doing this like research, is that by doing research, we were also, in a certain way, intervening, because we were asking childish questions to grown-up who give way childish answers. And by asking these questions, which is an intervention also, it's because it's also a sort of publication of their own ideas, and the questions then that we then ask also is also like a publication, or like to talk about the piece of art. And I think what we also provoked in this process is interest in not so much in whether this is like a field of stones and whether it would cost like $2 million to repair, but also in the fact that it's a piece that has identity, like citizenship. And I think this is also very important, because in the movie, somebody from Rijksbouwmeester or Overheid, I don't know which one it is, speaks about that there should be more information available. But I think it's not so much about information being available, because in the movie you also see that although information is there, like childish politicians are still able, or not able, are still willing to bend the rules or information to an extent that it fits their interest or their opinion. And I think that's also something that we should think about more. How can we how can we also speak about the new citizens in such a way that people are willing to get to know them? And so I think it's also a lot about that. It's not only about rights, it's also about emotions in a certain way. Yeah, I see a question.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Thanks. I was wondering, we see a lot of testimonies of the people who are politically quite skeptical of anything different than their original renewal plan. But I imagine that the political allies were also quite important, when, you know, the votes for the resolution was stunningly high. But maybe I missed something, but I didn't really see so much of your interaction with them, like just bonding and ally building. And I was wondering if you could say something about that.
Yes, I think I can say something about that, because I'm from this town and it has a very problematic city politics, characterized by external research as dogfighting. And this also, the way they are having like discussions is not constructive. And this is problematic not only if we speak about like a work in public space, like an artwork, but also if we speak about poverty or refugees or energy crisis or any like political problem. If it means that like politicians are fighting over that just to fuck up each other, it can't be constructive for the actual case that they are having this fight about. And I think that's something, especially for this town, and I'm pretty sure it applies to a lot of other places as well. That's quite uncanny, I'd say. Yeah, because then you have this democratic process, which is constructed by all sorts of rules. And then on top of these rules, people are just fighting about their positions and who is taking the spots by the next election. That's... So these alliances are often there because they were already there also over other topics, because they also unite against each other. And the movie doesn't show it so clearly, but it's something that was very visible when we were doing this movie. Yeah.
though, just before you intervene, Jack, the art school that you've survived rather than graduated from, I would say, seems to be a weirdly opaque and resistant interlocutor in all. I mean, there are these empty pronouncements at certain points, but I know from conversations with Hans that you had to, in a way, exit what was available in the art school to be almost like to engage the kind of institutional critique of the school in order to kind of exceed those frameworks and be able to do your work. It feels a little bit like the art academy is actually in alliance with whatever liberal interests are leading to the possible construction of the green corridor. What was your experience like?
Something that became very clear throughout, I think there's a lot of it in the film as well, is you've got these undercurrents of interest, but the thing that it's really about is the optics. It's the optics were very important for the academy, they were very important for the politicians. We dabbled in them as well. And at every turn, the conversation was almost never about the thing itself, but more about how can you frame this so that it benefits me? And it becomes quite tedious at some point because you never actually get to have a conversation about what we're talking about. We're always talking about, you know, how many trees are in the picture, you know. They would have the brochure and it would show the two plans, and one plan would just be like a poorly taken photograph of like it was raining and you would see the dirty work, and then the other picture would be a beautiful illustration with the straw. And this is not the way to have an equal and good conversation. And with the school as well, they were very good at political language, where they would always dart around what was actually going on. So even to this day, I'm not entirely sure what the hell was going on with the school. I just know that they got mad at us a lot.
Their motivations were never apparent.
It's not really in their interest. Yes, but it's not in their interest to just blatantly speak up about it. Like, they're not going to admit anything.
Because it's part of their mandate to participate in a conversation that concerns an art object with such an importance in the city, I guess.
No, yeah, it was very clear. They had real estate interests. They bought some buildings along that route. This whole plan of the city would improve the value of this real estate. And they had already from the beginning, as the chairman, you heard the chairman saying, of the academy saying, from the beginning on, they had close contacts to the city, which meant that they just agreed on. If you imagine, the moment they wanted to be the moment of final decision if this artwork could be remained or need to be demolished, was based on no text at all. Were just images of trees in green, and this academy and the Museum of Contemporary Art, imagine, and these are cultural art institutions, they were sort of recruited to so-called give a academic approval to that. You know, so they kept on saying, we do research, we first do research and then we can make the decision. But this was never done. It was just a frame for the press and for the outside world to legitimize a quick destruction of the work. And then we came in and we really said, well, we're going to do research. You need to stop. We wrote a letter with the same name as the academy, and the academy got furious at us and say, well, this is not us, this is some students of us, we want to distance ourselves from the. And from that moment on, the artist team got really more power. So it was actually a very good thing that the academy said, we don't want to work with these students anymore, we distance ourselves from that. And then they got power, and then the politics start to believe. Some politicians start to believe in the value of that research, and that made the whole thing shift, and in the end resulted in the, what you saw, that the work didn't get demolished.
And I think we obtained that power because it was not clear who we were. So the board was like distancing itself from us, but they had no clue who we were. So we also, like, we didn't have a clear phone address, like a phone number or an address or whatever. So we were a bit like some, I don't know, some ninjas, what? Yes.
Do you mean that because you are art renegade art students, you are no longer cushioned by the art academy?
But we weren't, because at that time either people were graduated already, or I never was a student in the project because I graduated already many years ago. I had, by the way, a very nice time at the academy and no problems graduating whatsoever. it's the place where I learned that to work in context is very interesting. And what I find funny about the way, like, how we were positioned is that we had this name, but we weren't that name. So we were considered to be students, but we weren't students. So we had this ambiguity that also is also very characteristic to art itself. So we in ourselves also had a sort of like artistic presence, or we had artistic characteristics as a research body, so to say. And I think that also gave us power, because nobody knew how to deal with us, because there was not really a way to threaten us. Or did you feel threatened? I think you did.
We really made it work because we were a bit of a collective of art students when the project started, and then once the project sort of entered a second phase where it was you came in and I graduated. But at all points, if I called people, I would call from a collective of people, and I really noticed, because I call a lot of people, and if I call just representing myself, people just hang up on me. But when you say, oh, I'm a student from the school and we're doing a project, suddenly people are a lot more easy to persuade, to, you know, give you information, let you in, let them talk to you. And that really, the part where you say, oh, I'm part of a student group, really gave power to actually get any kind of access. Whereas I'm absolutely sure if I'd just been like, hey, I'm an artist, I'm doing this thing, they would just been like, no.
Yeah, it's my last comment as a question, and then we'll open the floor for your remarks and interrogations. But and I'm sorry if I'm kind of resuscitating an obsolete notion, but a thought that keeps recurring as I watch this and I watch the kind of the polyphonic space that you organize around this profoundly ambiguous and interesting object. I wonder if a kind of idea of the monument isn't coming back in some form. Monuments are supposed to be visualizations and triumphs over social tensions and anxieties and fraught histories. They're, in a way, tombstones for debates. You know, a debate has ended and there's a monument, there's a plaque that says, this was a battle that we have won. These are the heroes and these are the martyrs. So the monument kind of separates the winners and losers. And I wonder if Strauchan's Blue Waves does not become perhaps a monument or a counter-monument through this remarkable confrontation of perspectives and opinions that the film creates around it, so that in a way it's lifted out of its utilitarian status, its original design, to fill a hole in the urban tissue and becomes a Tour Eiffel, perhaps. So, I mean, kind of rests itself up or bootstraps itself out of horizontality and becomes spectrally a standing ghost, in a way, of all these tensions. So I'm sorry for the very mixed metaphors. As I said,
I think this is also about like framing, and Jack says also is about framing. Like, I frame myself as a student, so I'm not be taken serious, and therefore I have way more power than if I would be calling as myself, as a citizen, or let alone an artist, you know. So so it's all about, like, you frame yourself according to what you think
the opposition will treat you like. And I think what you just say also is like for like Arnhem has like quite a severe history with the war, and it's full with monuments, like there's guns standing everywhere and this kind of shit. I like it personally. And the blue waves are actually like covering a pie hole in which a lot of remains of the city are being buried. So there's all these kind of framings that you can put into this monument, into the artwork and then it could become a monument. But I think personally that's also an aspect of a good artwork, is that it has so many different, can have so many different meanings. So yeah, I'm not sure if we would make it a monument just to give it legal status, I think is fine, but then we have to frame it to something, and then I do think we have to frame it as a monument for the presence of the car in our in our city or in a certain way. Yeah.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, loads.
Or for the ninjas who protected the blue wave.
Yes, I wondered what was the turning point, because the film keeps you wonder for a long time, will they, you know, what will happen? And then it seems like the fact that you managed to clean the place with sort of the blessing of the Mondrian Foundation actually turned, you know, led to a shift. Is that correct, or how did that work?
I don't know about the rest, but for me, the turning point never came. For me, the turning point never came. Well, at some point they voted, but up till that point I was still, that could have gone either way. But I do think that when we clean it, I had quite a lot to do with that, so I'm quite proud of it. I also cleaned off a lot of sand of the blue waves personally on my birthday. Okay, second joke. That I think that was quite important, but I think that was also very important because the fund that gave us the money to clean it, they're quite big in the Netherlands, Mondrian Fund, and that was kind of like a statement from them about, you know, the worth of the blue waves. So I like that.
Yeah, I just want to add, because it was such a beautiful moment, you know. Because the city decided to change the route, with the idea if we do that we can demolish the whole thing. So they did it in a very rough way, and you've seen it. You know, all these bulldozers are there getting rid of the work, and in between these people are cleaning the cleaning these stones. So it was visually, we got this money from the Monia funds. Stating that it would be a performance, the cleaning would be a performance, and they gave us the money. But in reality, it was such a beauty. You know, this was art in the most perfect way, I thought. But for me, it was the highlight, and maybe also the turning point, because then people could see you can clean it. You know, because the city really made a propaganda for the fact that it was too dirty, and everybody was annoyed by it, and it cannot be cleaned, cost so much money, let's all go together and demolish the whole thing. And when it got clean, everybody said, fuck, this is a beautiful artwork, no? And we really had the idea that if you, that's as a metaphor, you're going to be executed, you know, so you just decide to put on your best suit and say, okay, if you want to kill me in the best possible way. That was more or less what we intended to do.
I think for me the turning point was when we were already like quite far into the process, and we were getting involved, and also people became a bit familiar with us. But then at one moment, and this was also around the time that the cleaning was happening, that politicians suddenly start to ask, who are you actually and what are you doing? And then we could like speak about our project and say that why we clean this work, and what we are trying to show, and then we opened up this whole new layer of thinking about this artwork, about what process was happening, and yeah, I think we opened up another approach. What I just say is just like we are doing a research, and therefore we're intervening, and during intervening we're also publishing, and publishing things also is then the research again, because we are videoing this, and this was this like holy triangle of things that are a sort of like creative force. And at one moment people were sort of, I don't know, the force became so alive that people were wondering, what's actually going on, who are you? And for me that was quite a turning point, that the interest also was the other way around. Yeah.
Hi, thank you so much. Really fascinating film and great panel, so thank you. I'm so curious to hear what you think about a term that I felt was notably absent in this discussion, which is gentrification. You know, it seems so obvious to me watching the film that these like tacky images of like trees and, you know, meadows and rhododendrons are so much about creating value for private property owners, you know, and therefore transforming public space into a rentier regime. And so I was kind of, and of course this is happening everywhere, in Cairo, in London, in New York, all kinds of places, where this manicured kind of imagery of public space becomes a means of accumulation for those who own land, you know, in the vicinity. But at the same time, it occurs to me that if you use the term gentrification, it would not be effective in your sort of activist approach. So much more effective to do what you did, which is just keep asking questions of the people who are making decisions. So I was just very curious to hear how you were thinking about that.
I was thinking about gentrification at the time a lot. I was very much into The Daily Show, so I did most of the interviews pretending to be like a reporter on The Daily Show, asking questions. And it was very apparent that the whole idea with and the school buying buildings and what the municipality wanted to do is very much seemed like a classic, let's get this part to be more money generating. And as usual, well, I don't know if it's usual, but I can imagine this is something I feel artists tend to accumulate in places that aren't very rich, and then the place gentrifies, and then, you know, off you go, search for a new hole in the ground. And I'm very pleased that it hasn't happened yet there now, thanks to this work still being there.
Yeah. I clearly see what you mean, and I think we also discussed this, and also the elder man also opened up a sort of like, what is it, like Broedplaats, like an artist run initiative, which was not an artist run initiative but was just like a coffee place where, I don't know, two guys who did graffiti were serving coffee or something. And therefore, like, he had like the whole gentrification, how do you say, like some ready and also already getting a bit in progress. But I think he sort of misunderstood one thing. I think it doesn't really work in Arnhem, at least not in this place, because still, yeah, there's almost a sort of highway around there. I think it's maybe was also a bit asked too much from gentrification as a as a ghost. And I also think it's a stupid idea, because what I just said about everything being removed after 30 years in the Netherlands means that things cannot really mature, cannot really become, how do you say, like something authentic, that it needs more years, like the Eiffel Tower in Paris does. So I think what we also did is we played part in the gentrification by saving the art piece, because in 50 years, of course, it will be like the most expensive part of the city where you look out over this art piece. And this will all be like penthouses, and yeah, we will wonder ourselves if we were doing the right thing at that moment or not. Yeah.
Just one remark about gentrification and art, which I read a while ago. That's one project developer said, never tell an artist he didn't think of doing this thing in this place himself. So it's programmed that artists are sort of helping the project developers.
Thank you. Yes, for me it was also a question, of course, like in art, of conservation. And I remember last year, I'm an artist, and I had a discussion with a curator, and he finished, he was technician as well, and he told me, but... we ended up by saying, anyway, everything, nothing holds, everything dies, you know, in time. That's why we have ruins of architecture, of civilizations, and so on. So I think it was a point to just relieve, point out, to think differently, maybe even the approach of this place and the blue waves. Voilà, we could have imagined maybe, as you were starting to think at the end, something else. But it's a possibility. And I was very intrigued by this power, this strength, toward politicals, toward politics in general, and political people, as you say, they don't have belly, actually. They don't have really their own corp opinion. They just try to defend or to attack or to be diplomat or to be one side or the other of the coins. And I think... asking questions this way, like very chaotically, like putting everybody against each other, could be a good act of activism, as you did.
Thank you.